Blog Talk Radio.
Live on the air.
Or they're now from Lagos, dial in at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation, brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. Welcome to News Forum. This is your girl, Chinchilla Jonesia. And today, we have a beautiful, beautiful show for you all tonight. Another controversial topic, and this is something that's constantly in the news. Tonight's topic is the causes, effects, and effects of wrongful incarceration, mistaken identity, and prosecutorial misconduct. Now, these topics are always somewhere. You see them in a newspaper. You hear them on radio. You hear them on television and all kinds of things. There's even been movies made about people that have been wrongfully incarcerated. And this is something that's not, you know, abnormal. It happens all the time. And it's been happening even since the 1800s that people have been wrongfully incarcerated. Unfortunately, back in the 1800s, there was no such thing as DNA. So a lot of people that were falsely accused and wrongfully incarcerated back in the earlier years, guess what? A lot of them died in prison. Some were executed. Some never released, you know, and it's so sad. But today, with modern technology and with the use of DNA, that is helping many wrongfully incarcerated men and women become free men and women. But once they get out, are they really free? Wow. So we're going to look at a lot of this stuff. And, you know, some of you that are listening, I'm sure many of you may know at least one person that has been wrongfully incarcerated. Maybe you've been wrongfully incarcerated. And wrongfully incarcerated people, they go through a lot of trauma. And, you know, it's a devastating experience for them. And we're going to hear from a few of them tonight, as well as families of those that are still wrongfully incarcerated. And, you know, it's really sad. And here in the city of Philadelphia, there are a lot of wrongfully incarcerated people still behind bars. And the last year, from 2018 and 2019, once Larry Krasner, who is the district attorney here in Philadelphia, once he took office, he started to look at those cases of people that were saying that they were not guilty. And he started an integrity unit, the conviction integrity unit. And that unit takes and looks at certain cases. And if they see that there's like discrepancies in the cases, and if they see that, you know, there's some type of police misconduct that was going on, falsifying evidence, and, you know, prosecutors that, you know, did not do their job, or if they had witnesses that they withheld the witnesses from testifying, and all kinds of stuff goes on within the courtrooms and within these offices of the prosecutors, okay? And, you know, thank goodness that that office now exists, because if it did not, some men and women that have been released would still be behind bars right now. And it's just a grave disservice and a grave injustice to these individuals as well as their families. And like I said, wrongful incarceration, it has been happening practically forever. And back in the 1800s, you know, most of the people that were wrongfully incarcerated were people of color, and that's really a sad thing. And I actually have statistics for you all that I'm going to, you know, talk to you guys about a little bit later if I get to the statistics, because the hour goes by so quickly. But wrongful convictions, they're devastating events that are unfortunately not uncommon. In the United States, there have been 2,095 exonerations of innocent inmates since 1989. In that time, an average of 8.7 years was spent by each person for a crime they did not commit. In total, over 18,250 years was served. The Innocent Project is one of the organizations that have been on the front line of getting wrongfully incarcerated individuals out of prison. Now, this was as of 2017. Now, let's move up to speed, okay? Because in 2020, February, the new total for exonerations, 2,501 exonerations. They're listed in the National Registry of Exonerations. And the total years that these individuals spent behind bars add up to 22,540 years. That means like all of their sentencing that they spent behind bars wrongfully, that's how many years that add up to. And, you know, that is just so sad. And a lot of these men and women, once they get out, you know, they suffer from all types of things like post-traumatic stress syndrome and everything. And, you know, they don't like to be around people and they have a hard time readjusting back out here into society. And the sad thing is people that actually are guilty of their crimes and they do their time behind bars, when they come out, they have reentry programs and everything that they are put into, but not people that were wrongfully incarcerated and are exonerated. They come out, there's no reentry programs or anything in place for them, and that is very sad, very sad. So again, people, the number to call in tonight, 516-453-9133. If you want to talk, just press 1, and you will be put in the queue to join in on this controversial conversation tonight. And we also want to take a look at wrongful incarceration. Do you think it's a racial thing? You know, is it a racial issue? Mistaken identity, prosecutorial misconduct. Are these racial issues? So we're going to take a look at all of that tonight, everybody. All of that we're going to be looking at. Okay, so let's get started tonight. And let's see if we have a caller on the air right now.
Actually, you do. First caller is your guest. Caller, come on in the line right now with News Form right here at ONI.
I believe, is that Jeff?
Yes, it is, indeed. Yes, it is.
Oh, all right. Hey, Jeff. Okay, everybody. So my first guest tonight is Jeffrey Dekovic, and he is from New York, and Jeff was wrongfully incarcerated, and he served time for a number of years, and I'm going to let Jeff go ahead and tell you a little bit about his story, and then we're going to talk. Okay, go ahead, Jeff.
Sure. So I spent 16 years in prison. I was arrested at age 16. I got wrongfully convicted for murder and rape, which I did not commit. I lost despite a pretrial negative DNA test result. My wrongful conviction was caused by a coerced false confession, prosecutorial misconduct, fraud by the medical examiner, terrible public defender. I was given a 15 to life sentence, and you know, I ultimately served 16 years in prison from age 17 to 32. Along the way, I lost 7 appeals. I got turned down for parole because I maintained my innocence rather than expressing remorse and taking responsibility. And ultimately, I was exonerated by further DNA testing via the DNA data bank secured with the help of the innocence. And that not only established my innocence, but it also identified the actual perpetrator whose DNA was in the data bank because left free while I was doing time for his crime. He killed the second victim, who was a school teacher and had 2 children just 3.5 years later.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Wow. So through the use of DNA, if it had not been for that DNA testing, what do you think would have happened?
Oh, there's no doubt what would have happened. I would have kept being denied parole, and I'd still be in prison. Remember, my sentence was a 15-to-life sentence, which, you know, I finished the minimum. The life part of it means that there would have never reached a point in time when the state was legally obligated to release me, hence the term life.
Wow. That is something. Wow. So now the Innocent Project, with Barry Scheck and Peter Newfield. They're the ones who are at the Innocent Project. And they're in New York. I know that's one of the biggest organizations there, right? I think that's the biggest Innocent Project.
Yes, it is. Yeah, they have like a $13-14 million payroll. They were the first DNA centric organization, and from them all the other projects sprung up across the country. They're all independent, but they model themselves off of them. Hence, like, you know, the Innocence Project New Orleans, or the Florida Innocence Project, or the Georgia Innocence Project. You know, whenever that's why they have the term Innocence Project within their name.
Okay. All right. And so now I believe that there's like 46 different chapters now of the Innocent Project. And that is a wonderful thing. And I know back in the early on days, people had to pay for their own testing to get the DNA testing done. And now all that has changed now because they're so big now and they get a lot of funding. And that's a wonderful thing. And now, Jeff, can you tell me a little bit about when you were wrongfully incarcerated and you knew that you were innocent? How did that affect you mentally?
Yeah, well, I couldn't believe I was in prison half the time, and everything that it had happened. And then the other part of the time, I had to keep fighting off feelings of helplessness, hopelessness, thoughts of giving up. You know, I had to fight off suicidal ideation. I mean, all those were obstacles in addition to, you know, fighting against the district attorney's office and, you know, trying to obtain justice in the court. So it was a battle that was fought on multiple prongs.
Okay. All right. And now in your case with the prosecutorial misconduct, can you tell me a little bit about what happened there? Please elaborate on that.
Absolutely. So the medical examiner, when he did his autopsy report, you know, he made his report, and then after the DNA didn't match me, when it came in, the test results came in from the FBI lab. So first of all, the prosecutor ran to the grand jury and got me indicted one day before officially receiving the test results. So that was one thing. And the second thing is, when they didn't match me, suddenly this medical examiner, he claimed that he found medical evidence that he said showed that the victim had been sexually active, which is what the prosecutor used to fight against the DNA. So, I mean, the prosecutor knew that what the DNA not matching me meant. He knew that this medical examiner never said anything about that before. He only came up with that after the fact to help him fight against the DNA test result. In addition, he took it a step further, and he argued that it must have been a classmate that slept with the victim, mentioning somebody by name. And he never set the proper foundation, like he never had a DNA test performed on that individual. He never even called him as a witness. He made the unsupported argument to the jury. Lastly, this medical examiner had been complained of in neighboring counties, and the prosecutor knew that, and he never turned that information over to the defense. So all those aspects were the misconduct. In addition, it got worse on the appeal level. You know, the office was I was arguing my innocence based on the DNA, and the office, one of their opposition arguments, they said, well, you know, a negative DNA test result, that's no insulation to a guilt to a guilty verdict. They made this an absurd statement to make. Then in addition to that, they blocked me several times from getting further DNA testing. So that was And the last thing is, you know, the court clerk gave my lawyer the wrong information pertaining to the filing procedure. So my petition arrived 4 days too late, which the district attorney's office, they urged the court to just simply rule that I was late, dismiss my case. without even getting to my argument that I was innocent, and that's what the court did.
Wow. Wow. That was a lot, Jeff. And, man, it's so much of that happens all over the place. And, you know, it's just a shame that there's so much criminal behavior, because that's just downright criminal on behalf of the prosecutors and the police department. And, you know, that's just criminal. And something definitely needs to be done with them. I mean, there's nothing in place now, you know, anywhere really for them to be held accountable for their actions. And they need to have some type of sentencing. They need to be, charges need to be brought against them, because, you know, this is just outrageous, the stuff that they do and that they get away with all the time. And, you know, it just really boils me. It really gets under my skin when I hear cases such as yours, and cases of people now that are behind bars now because of things that prosecutors have done, because of things that the police department has done. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. And, you know, it just really ticks me off. It really does. It really does. But, Jeff, I'm going to ask you to stay on the line, because I want to come back to you, and I want to talk more with you about what you're doing there in New York and what you're trying to do in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania as far as prosecutorial misconduct, okay? And so just hang on in there, and I'm going to get back to you. I need to go to my next guest right now. And the next guest that we're going to hear from, this guest now, as we were talking about DNA, and, you know, DNA was unheard of for many, many years until the Innocence Project came about, and they started conducting DNA testing on wrongfully convicted persons that they felt as though was innocent. And more people heard of the innocent call and contact them. But however, in Pennsylvania, it was unheard of. And my next guest, he's the very first person here in Pennsylvania to ever be exonerated through the use of DNA. So welcome, caller, guest, my next guest, Vincent Modo. Welcome to you.
Caller, you're on the line. Okay, unmute yourself there. All right, 1 second there. Make sure that his line is clear.
Okay.
And his line has gone. So we're going to continue. We're going to bring our first caller of the night, and then we'll go back to Brother Jeff. Call number one, you're on the line right now with News Talk right here at ONE.
Welcome, caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
How are you doing? This is Victoria. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Hello, Victoria.
How are you doing, Chinchilla?
I'm doing well.
So,
how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. What had attracted me to this news forum is my husband, Melvin Ortiz, is wrongfully convicted in Pennsylvania, Reading, Pennsylvania. And it's a case of perjury, coercion of testimony from a minor, and prosecutorial misconduct, which is what wrongfully convicted him. He was arrested about a week after his 18th birthday for a robbery and homicide. Two persons had entered a local pizza shop and had attempted to rob the pizza shop. The robbery went bad, and unfortunately the owner of the pizza shop was killed. We're not sure how or why, but a specific individual was questioned about the robbery, and he gave the name of my husband at the time, Melvin Ortiz, claiming that Melvin had confessed to him he committed the robbery himself. So what led to Melvin's conviction was not DNA evidence. There was no DNA evidence actually taken from the crime. The police spent about 15 minutes at the crime scene and then had left. The owner was actually still cleaning up bullet shells from the robbery after the police had left. There was no physical evidence that ties into the crime, but it was simply testimony from two individuals. The one individual, a man, John Telcher Jerome, well, he was about, I think, 21, 22 at the time, and his 15-year-old girlfriend provided testimony stating that Melvin had admitted to them that he had committed the crime. Since then, the young girl who was 15 at the time has come forward and since had actually tried to come forward to the police about 7 or 8 different times, and they kept turning her away, stating that at the time the other man, whose name is John, had actually told her he was the one that committed the murder. She had also tried to let police know that she was the one that had disposed of the murder weapon, a ski mask, and other items that were provided to her from this man, John. But at the time of the murder, Melvin's name was basically destroyed throughout the local papers. They had called him a Latin thug. This was 1998, Berks County, Pennsylvania, primarily white county. His jury was, I think, with the exception of one person, all white jurors. Those two took the stand, and basically that was all it took really to convict him of murder.
Wow. Okay. So, Victoria, so that racial issue is something that you're dealing with right now.
Yes, I believe so. I mean, I think it'd be highly irresponsible of us to think race did not play a factor into this. You know, he was a young Latino kid. Again, in Berks County, at that time, it was extremely racist. I had went to school in that county at that time and experienced racism myself. We have to also keep in mind, even current date, Berks County is, I think, the only county in the state of Pennsylvania to hold an ICE detention center. I do believe race played a factor into it. All white jury sees this young Latin kid, and then there's two other white kids testifying, saying he committed the murder. John, the one guy who actually had stated that Melvin told him he committed the murder, he is the son of a former politician, Thomas Kelcher Jerome, who was a Pennsylvania House representative. I think they looked at him as to be someone who may be credible, even though at the time, and this is where the prosecutorial misconduct comes into play, at the time John had committed several crimes. I have the police reports proving so: robbery, vehicle theft, assault, battery, and other crimes. He would actually take his girlfriend with him to commit those crimes. And the criminal reports were written up. People were made aware. His father was made aware of these crimes. His father's name is in the criminal reports. However, for at least five crimes that we're aware of, he was never charged with a single crime. And that was never relinquished to the jury at the time.
Wow. I am so sorry that, you know, this has happened to you and to your husband. That's really a grave injustice there. Please keep us updated on the status of, you know, what's going on with him and everything. And, have you gotten in touch with the Innocent Project or anything?
We have. They're very aware of his case. Melvin does have representation. He was resentenced as a juvenile lifer, and with some new testimony, he was able to actually have his current appeal, which is the sixth appeal, similar to Jeff's story, his appeals were just denied and denied and denied time and time again. But now one has, the Superior Court has agreed to review his current appeal. So I think where we stand with the Innocence Project is they may feel that we have the appropriate representation that we need, but they are in contact with us, and we do keep the Innocence Project updated as well. And we'll be glad to keep you updated as well, too, Joel.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right. And what year did this happen, Victoria?
The incident happened at the end of 1997, about a week before Christmas. And Melvin was held till about, I think, July or August of 1998. Then, when he was finally given a trial, towards the end of 98, and he was convicted in 98.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah. Definitely keep us posted. So, and he was 18. At the time.
17 at the time of the crime, I forgot one thing. He did have an alibi. The judge would not let most of his alibi witnesses testify for him, but he was 17 at the time. He was about 30 minutes away driving from the scene of the crime at the time, and he was arrested about, I'd say, a month later when he was 18.
Wow. So, yeah, that definitely sounds like, that race did play an issue in that particular case. Especially, with jury. I feel as though, this constitution and the way the law is supposed to be set up is that you're supposed to be tried, with a jury of your peers. So if he's Latino, and he had a practically all-white jury, that's definitely wrong there. That's a sad situation, very sad situation. So I hope all goes well with the Superior Court, and you have the Innocence Project behind you now. And, once they get involved, things do start to happen. So I wish you the best of luck, Victoria, you and Melvin. And definitely keep me posted. And thank you so much for calling in tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Oh, wow. All right. So, Jeff, what do you think about that case there?
Yeah. And a lot of times people, an unfortunate common characteristic of wrongful conviction cases is that often people are convicted even though they're, many miles away. Some people have been wrongfully convicted of they weren't even in the state where the crime when the crime happened. I just want to delve super quickly, just to mention, intersection of race and stats. National Register of Exonerations, as of tonight, a few minutes ago, they're up to 2,696 documented exonerations across the United States, just from 1989 forward. In terms of percentages, the majority of people who are wrongfully convicted are minorities. Minorities are African Americans are seven times likely to be wrongfully convicted of murder, and they're three and a half times more likely to be wrongfully convicted of sexual assault. So those are definitely some racial crossovers to be sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Jeff. So hang on. Let me go to this next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Welcome to News Forum.
Caller, you're on the line right now. Unmute your phone. All right. Now, I'm going to explain something to everybody. This is the producer. When you press 1, that means that you want to talk to us. So I'm going to put you back on ice for a minute. And then, of course, when you're ready to talk again, please do. We do have another caller right now, Chinchilla. Right, I mean, just keep on moving, right? Caller number three in the line right now, Chinchilla. And News Forum right here at ONE.
Hey, peace, peace, and abundant divine blessings. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm enjoying this show. You know what? I knew it was only a matter of time for you to come forth and give us something that we have been needing for such a long time. And I know that I'm not the only one who's hearing and really enjoying this. Honors to your special guest. And this is one of the most important shows to be documented during our day and time. I just want to say thank you so much for doing what you're doing. Don't stop. And your good works is not in vain. Congratulations, News Forum anchor, Chinchilla Jonicia, on your ONE syndication station all-time connection record with your second all-time. I'm so proud of you. Keep raising the bar and keep making us proud.
Thank you so much, honey. Bakatoo. Thank you. Oh, wow.
You're
all right. All right. We're going to keep it moving on now. Now, I am still waiting. Hopefully, my other guest will call back in and because we definitely need to hear from him. Like I said, he was the first person to ever be exonerated due to use of DNA here in the state of Pennsylvania. And now, you know, he paved the way for all this to take place with his undying, non-ending, you know, determination that he was going to prove to everyone he was innocent, and he definitely was innocent, and we need to hear from him. So he needs to call back in, because we definitely have to hear from him. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for him to call back in, I do want to talk about a few other things regarding this wrongful incarceration and mistaken identity, because mistaken identity, that is almost, I believe that is one of the most, if not the most, cause of wrongful incarceration because of witnesses mistaking people, okay? And, you know, that's sad. And we know that there are some people, you know, that look alike, and sometimes people do mistake other people, and it's not intentionally. But then there are times when people have, you know, when people are put in the lineup, and if you have a, let's give a hypothetical here. If you have a white woman that has been raped, and, you know, if it's a black man that raped her, and she really doesn't care, if she doesn't see the actual man that's standing there in that lineup, she's going to pick somebody out of that lineup. And, you know, that does happen. That has happened many times, and it's documented. And then also another scenario. You have a woman, you know, let's say another Caucasian woman, and maybe she didn't see the person, but, you know, they accuse people of color for crime. And, you know, it's a terrible thing. And, you know, I really hate to say that, but sad, but it is definitely true. How many people of color get accused for all kinds of things? And when it comes down to it, when somebody actually saw what happened, and then they'd be like, oh my God, you know, it was a white person, or, you know, and it's just ridiculous. And things like this have to stop. So I think people that wrongfully accuse people, they need to be held accountable as well for wrongfully accusing someone that they know did not commit the crime. But yet they accuse this person, and then this person gets incarcerated, and now they're doing time, okay? And what happens to that person that was the cause of them being put behind bars? They're still just walking around free, and they sleep at night, and I don't know how they do it. You know, but, you know, hey, karma is a you-know-what, okay? And, you know, they will get theirs in the end, okay? Because, you know, God will prevail eventually. And they think they're getting away with all that nonsense now, especially people that know that they're guilty and they watch somebody else go to jail for their crime, oh, guess what? They will pay for their crime. They will pay. They think they're getting away now, but hey, their day is coming. Believe me, their day is coming. All right, so let's move right along now. Caller number four, hello, you're on the air. Welcome to News Forum.
All right, caller, you're on the line right now. Unmute your phone, please. Okay, all right. We're going to just put them back in ice. This line will not be opened again. That's the second time. All right, continue.
Okay.
Yes. Chinchilla.
Okay. All right. Now, here in the state of Pennsylvania, okay, you know, Pennsylvania is a state. Like, before Larry Krasner became the district attorney, we had some doozies of district attorneys here, and, you know, they were locking up black men left and right. And, you know, last year, there were, like, a record number of black men released from prison who were wrongfully incarcerated in 1 year, okay? 1 year. And since Krasner took office, okay, is a gentleman named Terrence Lewis. He's going to be a guest the next time I talk about these wrongful incarcerations. But he was one of 14 people to be exonerated, okay, since Larry Krasner took office, okay? And he expanded and created the Conviction Integrity Unit in 2018. And since then, hey, there's been exonerees that have sued the city of Philadelphia because of prosecutorial misconduct. Now, mind you, Pennsylvania does not have a compensation law in place, okay? People that get exonerated, they leave out of prison with a pat on the back and a good look, and that's about all. Okay, they don't give them a cent. They don't have any programs in place for these men. You know, and it's so sad. And most of them have spent time in jail, like over 10 years, 10 or more years in prison, some 21 years. I met a man last summer when we had a rally out in Rittenhouse Park. This man was incarcerated for 50 years, 50 years, wrongfully incarcerated. And, you know, that's just sad, very sad. And, you know, something really needs to be done. I can't wait to see the day that Pennsylvania has a prosecutorial misconduct law. And that's in the making. And, Jeff, you want to elaborate on that, please?
So in New York, we were able to pass what was called the Commission on Prosecutor Conduct, so an independent oversight board for prosecutors, because as you correctly pointed out at the beginning of the show, you know, prosecutorial misconduct is a major cause of wrongful conviction. It's currently, there hadn't been anything effective just to oversee, you know, to investigate it, to hold them accountable. But then in New York, we were able, so the Jeffrey Desk Fick Foundation for Justice, the nonprofit organization that I started using some of the compensation that I had received. You know, we don't just work to free wrongfully convicted people, but we also do policy work. And in the foundation, we're part of a bigger coalition called the It Could Happen to You Coalition. And we have chapters in New York, Pennsylvania, and California. So we were able to pass an oversight board for prosecutors in New York. And we built a statewide organization. And you know, the District Attorneys Association fought against us every step of the way, but we won. We got it passed. And now we're trying to bring that to other states, including California and Pennsylvania. So, you know, we're working on trying to pass that. I mean, that's really the prosecutor's worst nightmare. The commissions are game changers. It'll hold the prosecutors accountable. You know, it'll have ability to investigate, to review complaints. You know, complaints can be anonymous. They'll have subpoena power, and it'll give incumbents, district attorneys. They often there's really high reelection rate, and so the commission the way it would work would be if there was a finding of misconduct, for example, against a prosecutor in an office, then that would give the opponent something to run on. So they're really the commissions are really really game changers. So we're working on, you know, doing that. And Terrence is part of it. Can happen to you, Pennsylvania. Vincent Modo, who you were talking about, first man in Pennsylvania to use DNA. So we have him, and we have other exonerees, Mark Whitaker, Hassan Bennett, Drew Whitley, who did 20 years, to name just a few. And, you know, so we build our model as we build coalitions statewide using exonerees, people falsely accused but acquitted, criminal justice reform organizations, individual advocates, friends and family of people who allege that they're wrongfully imprisoned, formerly incarcerated people, and just everyday concerned citizens. So we have all of those types of people. Victoria is in the coalition. Millie Saligo is our chapter head in Pennsylvania. Mary Ann Lubas from Pittsburgh is another part of it. So we have a lot of help in Pennsylvania. We're going to keep building the coalition and continuing to we hold summits. You know, we've got elected officials involved, so we're going to keep on doing that and build this coalition as large as we can. And we're going to pass this commission, and we're going to get other criminal justice reforms done, such as videotaping interrogations, better identification, and we are in fact working on compensation as well. So hopefully we already got one bill passed already, the automatic expungement, because people were exonerated in court and they still had records, and so that would hurt them when they go for job interviews and, you know, looking for get apartments and things like that. So we already did pass something in Pennsylvania already, so we're going to keep at it.
Okay, that sounds great. All right. So stay on the line, Jeff. I'm going to go to the next caller. Next caller, you're on the air. Welcome to News Forum.
Actually, no calls at this time. Continue, Chinchilla. I'll let you know exactly when to call us some more.
Oh, okay. Because I have people that are messaging me saying that they're on there. And one lady said
they need
number
to press, they need to press one. And I think I might have one right here. As long as they press one,
okay,
come on the air. So all the calls right now that, you
okay,
know, they say they're calling in and they're doing, you know, they want to get on with Chinchilla, here's how it works. Press one so we can see you, and we'll get you right on. Now back to News Forum.
All right. Thank you. All right. So make sure y'all press that one, everybody, okay, so that my producer will know that you want to get on the line and talk. All right. So so that's a great thing that, you know, Pennsylvania now is starting to look at all of the terrible misconduct here. And, you know, it's been going on for years, and people been looking the other way. People been being paid off to falsify evidence. And, you know, especially if it's, you know, there's been cases where political people, you know, that their family members have even created, committed crimes, and, you know, they blamed it on other people and they falsified evidence and, hey, arrested other people for crimes that their family members committed, you know. And, you know, this has been going on forever. But thank God that now things are starting to change, and they're starting to change for the better. Now, will change actually happen overnight? No, this is a long process. As you see in New York, they're still trying to get everything really cleared there to really do what they need to do as far as getting these prosecutors, you know, fined, arrested, and charges brought against them. And, hey, it's an uphill battle, but as long as you continue to persevere, Jeff, you know, it'll get done. It'll get done. And we just have to be steadfast, unmovable, and unshakable, and knowing that change is going to come. Yes, it is. All right. So now let's talk a little bit more about, like, wrongful convictions, like, you know, back before DNA was around, because there's been, like, so much happening. Like, you know, I read about so many people that were executed when they had the death penalty and all that stuff. And, You know, people were executed because they were wrongfully convicted. A few of them executed. One man in particular, he was executed. And then they found out he was innocent a day too late, the very next day. Now, imagine that. I mean, that is just so sad. That is so sad. So here is in November 1805, right? This was the first wrongful conviction. The body of a young farmer, Marcus Lyon, was found on the open road near the town of Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Irish immigrants Dominic Daly and James Halligan were traveling in the area heading for New Haven. When they were arrested for the murder on November 12th, they were arrested for that murder of that body of the young farmer, okay? And their captor, like, you know, somebody caught them and said, okay, I found the people that killed this guy. So the captor received a reward of $500, right? And these guys that were arrested, they didn't have any defense attorneys or anything until 48 hours before their trial. And when the trial began, guess what? They were convicted within a matter of minutes. Not hours, not days, not weeks, not months, but minutes. Okay? Minutes. And one of the defense attorneys said that the evidence was so flimsy, it was obvious their conviction was based on outright bigotry. Okay? Why? Because they were black and the body of the individual, the victim, was what? Yeah, you got it. You know, so this is just sad. And now listen, they were not just arrested and put behind bars, but they were executed the very next day. The very next day on St. Patrick's Day, you know. And you know, it's just so sad, y'all. And these are the things that, you know, that happens all the time to people of color. And, you know, I've never heard of a trial that fast and an execution that fast. But thank God that I wasn't around back in that time, that time period. That's a nightmare. You know, that's so sad. And now, another guy that was wrongfully incarcerated, he was an Indian, a Native American. And this was back in 1885. And when he was arrested, he maintained his innocence. But guess what? They still convicted him and they executed him as well. And that is just so sad. So back in those days, they were convicting people and executing them. Now, just imagine that was still going on today. How many black men we would have lost, okay, due to wrongful incarceration? They would have been arrested, convicted, and executed. This is just outrageous. Outrageous. All right, do we have another caller on the line?
Yes, you do.
Hello.
Caller, you're on the air. Welcome to News Forum.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, hold on. Whatever you are right now, let me take you off. Take yourself off speakerphone because you're echoing very, very bad in the line. So we want to make sure that we respect all the listeners around the world that are listening. So we're going to try this again. So take yourself off speakerphone so we can hear you clearly. And welcome to News Forum at this time. There we go. Sounds good.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everyone. This is Karen Brookins. How are you?
Good evening, Karen. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I thank you for inviting me on to this show tonight, and I'd just like to tell you a little bit about my amazing husband. His name is John Brookins. John Brookins has been wrongly convicted and has been incarcerated for 30 years. He currently resides at SCI Phoenix, which is in Pennsylvania. There's many moving parts to John's case, and that are still unfolding. But basically, John was an invited guest to a friend's house, and when he walked into her house, he witnessed her daughter stomping scissors into her chest and had murdered her mother. John is an African-American man. The victim's daughter is biracial, and the mother is white. The daughter herself was a drug addict, very unknown drug addict with violent tendencies, according to police records. Multiple violent police reports, was a sex worker and a drug addict. And she fled the scene. When she fled the scene, my husband picked up the phone. He picked up the remote to turn the TV off or down because it was blasting snowy sound. He said he just went to turn it down or turn it off, and he picked up the phone to call 911. She ran out the door, and he stood there literally with the phone in his hand and thought to himself, here I am, an African-American man. Here's a white woman that's murdered. He left. He left the scene. He did leave to go look for the perpetrator, and he couldn't find her after driving around the parking lot some time. Fast forward, 6 months later, my husband was arrested for the murder of Sheila Ginsburg. Faulty DNA, prosecutorial misconduct, police misconduct, tunnel vision, threatening of witnesses, there's quite a few, ineffective assistance of counsel. All of these things came into play, not to forget that it was an all-white jury. There were 102 jurors polled. Two of them were African-American. Of course, they were dismissed, and he ended up with a jury, all white, middle-aged, maybe a little older, none of his peers. One of the jurors worked for the printing company that produced the forms and paperwork for the police department. The lawyer that was appointed to my husband was a lawyer that was appointed through the court. There was a severe conflict of interest because he himself was also a county solicitor with the Bristol Township Police Department, which was the police department that had wrongly arrested my husband. Yeah. So he sits. Right now, we do have an excellent attorney by the name of Craig Cooley, who has years in with the New York Innocence Project. And the New York Innocence Project is associating in, and they have requested the DNA, that the DNA be turned over for testing, because 30 years ago, the testing that is available now was not available, and we all know that the testing would reveal, or should reveal, the perpetrator of this murder, who would not be my husband. But, of course, Bucks County's refused the DNA. They're refusing to turn it over. So we have a petition in with now Superior Court, and now it's going on to Supreme Court. Superior Court denied it.
Wow.
Yeah. And now it's going on to Supreme Court. In addition to that, he has he has a chance for commutation. He's in the pipeline for commutation. His case is also supported by Georgetown University under the direction of Mark Howard and Marty Tankleff. Marty Tankleff himself is an exoneree himself. I believe he spent 17 years in prison for the murder of his parents. And once he proved his innocence, he's out, and now he's an attorney. And I know Jeff knows him very well.
Okay. Wow.
And then the podcast Undisclosed just did a story on John, and so did Unjust and Unsolved. He's got great support. He's got people that has researched his claims, and extensive research has gone in, and they recognize his innocence. And there's many people that do want to help him. So, but prosecutorial misconduct is definitely something that needs to be abolished.
Yes, it definitely does, because that plays a factor in so many of these wrongful convictions, and it's just a sad thing, a very sad thing. And I wish you the best of luck, Karen. And
thank you.
Hopefully your husband will be coming home soon. And you have some great people behind you guys now, and things should be looking up for him. And
thank you.
I know it's been a long time, and 30 years, but my gosh, that is an extremely long time. So the best of luck to you and to your husband. And
thank you.
I will be let you know. Keep me posted, please, okay, with what's going on.
I sure will.
And yes, yes, and thank you so much for calling in tonight and sharing your story with me. And with the world, okay, because, hey, the whole world, okay, tonight. And so thank you for sharing your story. All right. Now, callers, some of you that called in tonight, you dialed, but you did not press the 1. And some of you that did press the 1, you don't just automatically get on when you press 1. So I have a lot of people saying they press 1 and they were trying to talk, but nobody could hear them. You're muted until you're in the queue. So you are in the queue, but then when it's your turn, then the producer unmutes you for you to talk, and then that's when we'll say, caller, you're on the air, and then, you know, you should hear something in your ear saying unmuted. So that's the way it works on this type of call-in show. So for those of you that called several times and thinking that it was something wrong with the line, there was nothing wrong with the line at all, but you just didn't know that, you know, we don't hear you until you're unmuted, okay? All right, so anyway, let's see. So Vincent Moto, we do apologize, but if you do call back in again, please, if you press that 1, just stay on the line and just hang in there and be patient. All right, so we will definitely, if we don't hear from Vincent tonight, we will definitely make sure we get him on the next time. So, because we definitely need to hear his story. His story is very unique. And like I said, he was the first person here in Pennsylvania to ever be exonerated through the use of DNA. And he paved the way for all of these other young men that have been released since Larry Krasner has taken office. And so this was like back in the 90s, okay? Back in the 90s, and wow, so he's been out now for like 20 years, 20 plus years. Okay, so anyway, Jeff, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Okay, now Jeff, I just want to make mention, now Jeff, as he shared his story with everyone, now Jeff, in the state of New York, they have a compensation bill there, and we're not going to get into compensation tonight. That's going to be another whole nother topic, because that's a really controversial topic as well. But in the state of New York, they do compensate. And so Jeff was able to be compensated. Can you please just let us know how you used your money, Jeff?
Yes. I used some of the money that I got to start the Jeffrey Juskovic Foundation for Justice. So I used some of it to, which has its mission to free other people who are in the same position that I was in. So we've been able to get 8 people home, and you know, that were wrongfully imprisoned, and we've been able to pass policy changes as well. We were able to pass three laws in New York, and then another one in Pennsylvania in the coalition group. And I do want to add that, you know, I've kind of found my mission in life. I mean, I do believe that I'm doing what I'm intended, and, you know, what my purpose in the world is. And as of October 26th, you know, I got my law license. So, you know, when I was exonerated, I got a scholarship to get the bachelor's, and I did that, and I got the master's degree. My thesis is written on wrongful conviction causes and reform, I graduated law school last year, and I got my law license in October 26th. So I'm officially an attorney.
Wow, that is great, Jeff. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, keep up the good work, and keep up the good work and everything with all that you're doing in New York and in Pennsylvania and in California. And that's so wonderful. So wonderful. All right. Thank you so much for calling in and for being my special guest on tonight. And next time, we definitely have to get Vincent on here and so we can hear from him next time. And but thanks again, Jeff. And right now, everybody, I want to thank you all for listening tonight to this very controversial subject on wrongful incarceration, mistaken identity, and prosecutorial misconduct. So what do you think tonight, everybody? Was it based upon race? Is it based upon race? Because Black and white and Latinos are arrested and wrongfully convicted. But who is convicted the most? You got it. People of color. People that look like me and you. Okay? Blacks are the most. All right, this girl's until it's in Gozy time.
Well, first of all, I want to thank everyone that called into the show tonight. And again, you know, all the people that, you know, were here, but you got to press one. This is Blog Talk Radio. You know, we do things, you know, professionally. You know, you say unmuted. You know, when you say it says press one to speak to the host, you know, and so that's how that works. So we want all the folks out there that called in tonight. You know, this show is weekly. It's not like all of, you know, all of our concept shows. They come on once a month. We have a sports director and a news anchor that comes on every single week because those facets are very, very relevant, and we must keep up with the time. So we want to thank all the folks that called in tonight for News Forum, and congratulations to Chinchilla for breaking the all-time record here, only her second all-time. And basically, there we go. So the key is this. Again, please, and I know that caller just said that too, when we came on the first time, we tried to unmute you, and no one heard you. So that's why you haven't cut off, because we're just real time, and we can't have any dead air on the air. Now, tomorrow night, on these stations, we have Ralph Ippolito and the Ralph Ippolito Comedy Commentary. I cannot wait for this show. This is his first show out of internship, and what more can we do? It's only Dynasty. It's fantastic. And I'll be tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern, standard time on these ONE stations. Of course, Beverly says advertising to ONE, which is on the Deli and Gozy Enterprise Research, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment@wordpress.com, as well as in Gozy Prime Time on that, www.com. We're in Gozy Time, both for Twitter and Instagram, on the Deli and Gozy at Pinterest and Google+, on the Deli and Valera and Gozy at Facebook, as well as our business page, News Forum, as well as the historic Deli Nation Online Radio, established 2013. Any comments, suggestions for a wonderful program tonight? Oh, lay day, lay down. It goes with my gmail.com. Not yet. Your mother and father's favorite producer, Ola W. Malou and Gozy, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that supports the consultation tonight. And of course, Chinchilla, take us home. You have 2 minutes left to go on the program.
All righty. Thank you so much, oh, wonderful, wonderful producer. All right, everybody. I thank everybody that called in tonight. I thank my special guest tonight. And I do apologize to Vincent Moto. And we will definitely have him on next time. And next week, we're going to be talking about compensation laws countrywide and looking at each state and find out what type of compensation that they're providing for their wrongfully incarcerated people once they're exonerated. Does your state have a compensation law? Or is it like Pennsylvania that gives their exonerated zippo? That's a shame. But there are other states like that, but Pennsylvania is the worst. All right, so again, thank you everybody for listening tonight. And next week, tune in, same place, same time, News Forum with your girl, Chinchilla Jonesia. Signing off. Until next week, peace.